All right, so ready to like dive into some like deep philosophical waters.
Always up for a challenge.
Okay, good, because today we're tackling Merleau-Ponty's
Oh, wow.
Phenomenology of Perception.
Yeah.
It's
A big one.
it's a challenging read, but trust me,
Oh, yeah.
it's worth it.
For sure.
We're working with excerpts from the book itself,
Okay.
and its foreword.
Cool.
And I have a feeling this is gonna like change how you think about, well, pretty much everything.
I think you're right about that Merleau-Ponty really like flips the script on how we understand our experience in the world.
Okay, so let's unpack this.
All right.
Where does he even start?
He starts by taking on some of the big hitters in philosophy,
Okay.
empiricism and intellectualism. These are like classic ways of thinking about perception.
Right.
But Merleau-Ponty argues they both miss a crucial piece of the puzzle.
Okay,
Hold
I'm
on.
struggling to wrap my head around this.
Yeah.
If our senses and our minds aren't enough to explain perception, what is Merleau-Ponty suggesting is going on?
He's saying we need to pay more attention to the body.
The body.
Yeah, you see, empiricism, which focuses on sensory data,
Right.
can't quite explain how we perceive things because it relies on this idea of a fixed relationship
Okay.
between stimuli and perception. But things like optical illusions completely mess that up.
Oh, yeah. Like that one with the two lines that are the same length but
Exactly.
look different because of the arrows pointing in or out.
Exactly. That's the Miller-Lyer illusion,
Okay.
and it shows that context matters. Perception isn't just about what our senses pick up.
Right.
It's about how our brains interpret that information.
Okay.
And that interpretation is influenced by all sorts of things.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So what about intellectualism?
Sure.
How does that one fall short?
Well, intellectualism puts way too much emphasis on the mind.
Okay.
It suggests that our minds are just slapping interpretations onto the world based on some pre-existing categories. But that doesn't really explain where those interpretations come from in the first place.
Okay, so both of these approaches are missing something crucial.
They are. And that something, according to Merleau-Ponty, is the body.
Okay.
He argues that our bodies aren't just vessels for our minds,
Right.
they're the very foundation of how we experience and understand the world.
Whoa, okay. One of the most fascinating ideas in the book is this concept of the body schema.
Oh, yeah.
Can you break that down for us?
Absolutely. The body schema is this amazing unconscious awareness we have
Okay.
of our own bodies and their possibilities for movement. It's not about consciously thinking, oh, I have an arm and I can move it like this. It's a deeper pre-reflective understanding that allows us to navigate the world without having to think about every single movement we make.
So it's like when you're riding a bike,
Yeah.
you don't have to think about every movement. Your body just knows what to do.
Exactly. Merleau-Ponty uses a really interesting case study to illustrate this. A patient named Schneider, who, after suffering brain damage, lost this intuitive sense of his body.
Wow.
He could no longer just reach for an object naturally. He had to consciously think through each step, which shows just how much we rely on this unconscious body schema.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah.
So if I'm getting this right, Merleau-Ponty is suggesting that our experience of the world is shaped by our bodies in a way that we're often not even aware of.
That's exactly it. He says, and this is one of his most famous lines,
Okay.
"The body is my point of view upon the world."
This is really challenging my assumptions about how I experience the world.
Yeah.
It makes me wonder if our perception is so deeply rooted in our bodies, how does Merleau-Ponty see this impacting our experience of something as fundamental as space and time?
That's a great question. And it gets to the heart of how Merleau-Ponty rethinks some of our most basic concepts.
Okay.
He argues that space and time aren't these fixed objective containers we exist in.
Brian.
Instead, they're deeply intertwined with our bodily experience.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Tell me more about this.
Think about how you experience space.
Okay.
It's not just an empty grid.
Right.
Your sense of space is shaped by your body's movement and interaction with the environment,
Okay.
where you can reach what you can see, how you move through the world.
Right.
All of these things contribute to your unique understanding of space.
So you're saying that my experience of space would be different if I was, say,
Exactly.
a foot taller or if I used a wheelchair.
Exactly. And Merleau-Ponty takes this even further with the idea of
Okay.
mythical
Mythical
space.
space.
He suggests that different cultures experience space in different ways based on their practices and beliefs. A forest can be a sacred place for one culture,
Right.
A source of fear for another and a place of economic opportunity for a third.
Wow.
Their bodily interactions and cultural history with that space completely shape their understanding of it.
That's fascinating. So even something as fundamental as our experience of space isn't universal.
It's not. And the same goes for time.
Time. Okay.
We tend to think of time as this linear progression.
Yeah.
But Merleau-Ponty suggests our experience of time is also deeply embodied.
Right.
It's influenced by things like our heartbeat, our breathing, our movements, and even our emotions.
So instead of time just picking by objectively.
Right.
Our bodies are actively involved in shaping how we experience it.
Precisely. Think about how time seems to fly when you're engrossed in something you enjoy.
Yeah.
Or how it drags on when you're bored or anxious.
Right.
Our bodies are constantly influencing our perception of time.
It is blowing my mind.
Yeah.
So how does all this tie back to the concept of self?
Right.
If our perceptions of space-time and the world are so intertwined with our bodies, does that change how we think about who we are?
It absolutely does. Merleau-Ponty argues that our sense of self isn't something separate from our bodies or our experiences.
Mm.
It emerges from our embodied interaction with the world.
Okay.
He even proposes this idea of a tacit cogito.
Tacit cogito.
A sense of self that precedes our conscious thought.
So you're saying there's a deeper knowing that comes before language, like when you instinctively dodge a ball before you even have time to think about it.
That's a great example. This tacit cogito is a sense of self that's rooted in our being in the world, not an abstract thought.
Correct.
It's a felt sense of our own existence that comes from our bodily engagement with our surroundings.
This is really making me rethink the whole I think, therefore I am thing.
I know, right?
Huh.
It's more like I am, therefore I can think.
Right.
Our being precedes our thinking.
So if our sense of self is so intertwined with our bodies and our experiences, what does that mean for something like freedom?
Right.
Are we really free if our choices are so influenced by our physical limitations and our past experiences?
That's the million-dollar question, and Merleau-Ponty doesn't offer any easy answers.
Okay.
He suggests that our freedom is always situated, always embedded in a context.
Mm-hmm.
Our choices and actions are shaped by our bodily situation, our personal history, and the specific circumstances we find ourselves in.
So we're not these purely rational beings making choices in a vacuum.
Not according to Merleau-Ponty. He says our freedom is always embodied, always influenced by the concrete realities of our lives.
That's a pretty radical departure from how we usually think about free will.
Yeah.
It almost makes it sound like we're not as free as we think we are.
It's definitely challenging our traditional notions of freedom.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean we have no agency whatsoever.
Right.
Our freedom lies in how we respond to the circumstances we find ourselves in.
Hmm.
It's about acknowledging the limitations of our situation while still recognizing our ability to act and make choices.
So it's like we're playing a hand of cards. We don't get to choose the cards we're dealt.
That's a great analogy.
But we do get to decide how we play them.
We're not completely free, but we're not completely determined either.
Right.
Our freedom exists in that space between our limitations and our possibilities.
Hmm. I like that. This whole idea of situated freedom is really making me think.
It's a fascinating concept.
It seems like Merleau-Ponty is saying that our responsibility for our actions is also more complex.
Oh, for sure.
Than we might initially assume.
That's right. If our choices are always shaped by our circumstances, it raises questions about how we hold people accountable for their actions.
Yeah.
It's not about simply saying, you made a bad choice, therefore you're a bad person. We have to consider the context, the history, the bodily situation of the individual.
It seems like a much more nuanced and compassionate way of approaching ethics and justice.
It is. Merleau-Ponty's work encourages us to move away from simplistic judgments and to engage with the complexity of human experience.
Right.
It's a call for empathy, for recognizing that everyone's choices are shaped by their own unique journey.
So it's not just about understanding how our bodies shape our perception.
Right.
But also about recognizing how those embodied experiences shape our values, our beliefs, and ultimately our actions in the world.
Absolutely. And this has implications for everything from how we understand knowledge to how we approach social justice.
Can you give us an example of that?
Sure. Think about the concept of objectivity.
Okay.
We often assume there's this neutral, objective way of seeing the world.
Mm-hmm.
But Merleau-Ponty challenges that.
Okay.
If our knowledge is grounded in our bodily experiences, then it means our perspectives are always shaped by who we are, where we come from, and how we move through the world.
Yeah.
There's no escaping that.
So instead of striving for some impossible standard of objectivity, we should be more aware of our own biases and be open to different ways of seeing things.
Exactly. And when it comes to social justice,
okay,
Merleau-Ponty's ideas can be really powerful.
How so?
They help us understand how systemic inequalities are embodied in our social structures and practices.
Mm-hmm.
For example, ableism isn't just about abstract ideas of fairness.
Right.
It's about recognizing how people with different bodies experience the world in fundamentally different ways and how those differences can have real material consequences.
That makes a lot of sense. So as we wrap up this deep dive into Merleau-Ponty's phenomenology of perception, what's the one big takeaway you hope our listener walks away with?
I think the most important thing to remember is that your body isn't just something you have.
Hmm.
It's the foundation of how you experience and understand the world.
Right.
It shapes your perceptions, your thoughts, your emotions, and even your sense of self.
So what does that mean for our listener? What should they do with this newfound understanding?
Pay attention to your body. Listen to what it's telling you.
Okay.
Notice how it influences how you move through the world, how you interact with others, and how you make sense of your experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And be open to the possibility that there's always more to see, more to feel, and more to know.
That's a beautiful way to put it. It's an invitation to engage with the world in a deeper, more embodied way.
It is. And it's a reminder that our bodies are not just vessels for our minds, but integral partners in our journey of understanding ourselves and the world around us.
Thank you so much for taking us on this journey through Merleau-Ponty's work. And to our listener, we hope this deep dive has given you some food for thought. Keep questioning, keep exploring, and keep experiencing the world in all its wonder.